Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Out of Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, we'll dip into the mailbag, look ahead to Newcastle, report some disturbing news about Sam Kerr, and do a quiz. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Out of Cobham. Right, it's Thursday. You know what that means. It's time for your second dose of Cobham of the week. And I've got the two most expert of Chelsea experts alongside me to discuss everything blue related today. Hello, Liam Toomey.
Hello, how's it all going, Matt?
All right, yeah, pretty good, I think. Simon Johnson's back with us too. How are you, Simon?
Oh, cheerful as ever, Matt. Yeah, I'm here.
Lovely stuff. When I wrote the start of this script, it said a slightly quieter week in the world of Chelsea FC. I'm not sure that's totally applicable anymore. But anyway, we thought we'd take the opportunity to answer some questions. So that's what we're going to start with. And let's kick off with the hot topic du jour. Gabs, Andy and Tony amongst those asking about a return for a man who previously knew exactly what we needed, namely Thomas Tuchel, or indeed a first spell for Bob De Zerbi or Ruben Amorim. Basically, what's the latest manager-wise? Liam, we spoke as to whether Saturday was a turning point for Maurizio Pochettino. You were there at Brentford. The fact that the story seems to have moved on amongst the nation's press would suggest that perhaps it was. Is there anything in any of these rumours, or is this just Thomas Tuchel desperately starting his process to find new employment?
Well, I don't think we'll be seeing Thomas Tuchel back at Chelsea. That appears to be one of the more optimistic lobbies among the fan base. We shouldn't forget that he was sacked primarily because he clashed with the ownership, and the ownership hasn't changed. So I don't see how those relationships would be in any better of a place. And if anything, you know, Tuchel's stock has fallen slightly with what's happened at Bayern Munich. He's emerged from that, I think, a little bit more bruised, and doesn't mean he won't get another top job, if you can call Chelsea a top job right now. But yeah, Chelsea isn't an option for him. He's not an option for Chelsea. As for the other two, Amorim, De Zerbi, the sense we're getting is that talk of any particular names is premature. We know that Chelsea like Ruben Amorim because they told Ruben Amorim that they liked him before they hired Graham Potter. They kind of checked in with him and let him know that he was on their radar. And we reported that at the time. So this is a long-standing regard, shall we say. And they're not the only ones, clearly. You know, Ruben Amorim is one of the more highly thought of young coaches in Europe with what he's done at Sporting. But there, I don't get the impression there's anything happening right now. Certainly not with a view to anything before the end of the season. Roberto De Zerbi, he's from Brighton. So, of course, Chelsea would be interested if he's being employed by Brighton. But in all of these cases, there is not a formal coaching search going on right now. Chelsea want to get behind Pochettino for the rest of the season, see how the season ends. And then the plan was always to evaluate things then. So we've heard nothing to suggest that will change. And I also don't really understand. I understand support frustration, but I don't really understand where the push from some is coming from to sack Pochettino now. Because we saw this movie last year when you sack a coach you're not happy with before the end of the season without a clear plan to replace him or with anyone particularly keen to come in. You end up in caretaker manager mode with a squad that know the season's gone. And as we learned in the final couple of months of last year, things can always get worse. Chelsea might be mid-table now, but they could go from inconsistent to utterly depressing on a weekly basis. So I would expect Pochettino to get the rest of the season unless things just become completely unbearable. Yeah, I just don't really see the upside of changing now. And I don't think that the ownership do either.
All right, we can draw a line under that then and just look forward to Chelsea winning the FA Cup and sneaking fifth place.
Can I just add something to that, though, Matt?
Yeah, I do.
Lessons were learned from the speed in which Chelsea went from Tuchel to Graham Potter. I think with the benefit of hindsight and how things worked out, that perhaps there's a recognition that there wasn't as much time taken over that decision as perhaps there should have been. Of course, hindsight's a wonderful thing and there was all good intentions, etc. And Graham Potter was thought to be a good choice. And of course, Pochettino was also considered at the time. But in this day and age, it is normal to think ahead. And every club will always do that, have contingency plans, etc., and start thinking about names. So while I think we're going to see a lot of speculation about what Chelsea are doing or thinking of doing, but that doesn't mean that they're actively looking to replace someone, but it is normal to start considering plan A's, B's and C, etc., not just with managers, but with players and so on and so forth. So I think Pochettino knows that he's under pressure. I think you can tell that by the way he talks to the media about his situation, saying it's out of my hands, you have to ask the owners. I think that's a classic manager speak for it's not up to me. I know that the decision, my fate lies with what other people want to do. And also, he knows that 11th place is not good enough. It's not what he was hired to do, despite his pleas for time and patience. He started off his Chelsea reign saying, no excuses, Chelsea have to win. So by his own rhetoric, from the start of his tenure, he's underachieving. So the last few months is big for Pochettino. I don't think anyone should be under any illusions otherwise.
Yeah, he only had a 2-year contract to begin with, didn't he? Which tells you a fair bit. Right, Simon, this is sort of tangentially related to that and the recent history of Chelsea. Sorry, it is 9:13 a.m. as we record, and I've just busted out the word tangentially. I'm desperate for this podcast to get nominated for an award next year.
Got to Google that. Sorry, just a sec.
Well, while you do that, take in this question from Freddie. Can the guy speak at length about what, if any, of the current malaise on and off the pitch has come from the latter years of the Abramovich era and their lack of structures planning? Obviously, Bluko hasn't done well, but feels like the club was more of a poison chalice than we knew. This comes back to the old hire and fire him thing that we've just been alluding to, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think this is a valid point that not everything was all fine and dandy in the garden before the new owners arrived, and that's not defending the new owners. Things shouldn't be as bad as they are, obviously, in the last 2 years. It's been an incredible drop-off. Although you can't accuse them of lack of ambition. It may not have worked, but they've spent an awful lot of money to try and make it work. But before they arrived, where were Chelsea at? You have to ask this question. And yes, you look at it and you go, they reached 2 cup finals. They could potentially do that this season. Lost them both. Where were they in the league? They finished a distant third. Yeah, they sort of had a title race. They were in the title race up until December, and then fell away. But they haven't won the league, or they hadn't won the league since 2017. They hadn't competed really, despite what I just said about 2021-22. They hadn't really lodged a proper title challenge since they last won it. The recruitment has been terrible generally in the latter part of the Abramovich era. You sort of think of particularly the transfer windows 2015, 2017, after they won the title. Essentially, Chelsea really should have set themselves up to be the kind of club Manchester City now is. But Manchester City sort of had a plan, yes, to spend, but also to set up a proper way of running the club. And I don't think, and this may sound like hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I've always argued Chelsea succeeded in spite of themselves, not because they were some sort of wonderful, brilliantly run club. They just spent very well to begin with, and then increasingly it got worse. And then, of course, you've got the hiring and firing of managers, which, again, you can say it worked, and it certainly, you can't argue with the record. But because of that hiring and firing record, approaches for managers like Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp were given short shrift by those men, because they knew they wouldn't have the time or the patience to do what they wanted to do. So then you look at players that had nothing to do with the new owners going, like Rudiger, key players that they couldn't sort of keep by the time they arrived, and sanctions definitely hurt the club too. So I do think some of the damage, some of the warning signs were there that Chelsea were in some kind of decline by the time the new owners took over. But again, I hasten to add, I don't think we can also say that mid-table and the levels that Chelsea have dropped to, you can't blame that on the Abramovich era. This has been some drop-off.
The new owners got a lot wrong, but that doesn't mean they were wrong about everything. Simon spoke about some of the issues with the squad when they came in. They had guys like Malang Sarr on £100,000 a week. And wages like that across the board were unsustainably high for the revenue that Chelsea brought in. That had to change one way or the other. Didn't necessarily have to change with an entire squad of under 23s on 7 and 8 year contracts, but it did have to change in a big way. And one thing that we haven't mentioned, the ongoing Premier League investigation into payments, financial irregularities from the Abramovich era. That's something which this new ownership has been lumbered with, and we're yet to see what the consequences of that will be. We know that they've taken a fine from UEFA. Premier League may not be content with a fine, depending on what evidence is unearthed and just how serious the breaches are. So there were all sorts of challenges, and Chelsea was a dysfunctional club in a lot of ways. I think the big thing that you can level with the new owners is that for all the change they needed to do, they changed more than they needed to. They changed everything. And at times in these first 2 years, it has felt like it's been more about an ideological drive to change everything that had even a whiff of the Abramovich era about it across every department of the club than necessary change. And the problem when you do that and do it as quickly as they did it, is that you risk sweeping the good away with the bad. You risk erasing the DNA within the club that powered these trophies, even if, as Simon rightly points out, it was a diminishing return of trophies towards the end of the Abramovich era. They were still winning, they were still competing, and now they're just nothing. It doesn't mean they always will be, but right now they're more irrelevant than they were for all but one season of the Abramovich era. And I think that change, you have to look at that change as being responsible.
Oh, that was a bit depressing. Let's see.
If this can cheer us up a bit, here's one for you, Liam. It comes from Gabe, who says, can Liam let us know if he still sees the supposed tactical idea he claimed Poch is implementing in the last few games? Sort of affected by Brentford, right? Because he changed the formation to match up the opposition. I think the general point Gabe's making is, do you see the game plan that Poch has got?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit mystified as to these questions because we've been getting them most of the season, and whether or not a plan is well executed or even smart in its conception is not the same as saying you don't have a plan. I've never got the impression, looking at Chelsea this year, that Pochettino doesn't have a clear idea of how he wants this team to play. I think they've always tried to play a similar way. Even it was slightly different against Brentford. I think that was the first time that he'd really altered things in recognition of what he is always referring to as the circumstances, i.e. the injuries, the fatigue in certain areas, particularly midfield, and the particular challenges that Brentford pose you in terms of the unusual way they play. But generally speaking, it's been 4-2-3-1. It's been aggressive high press. It's been play out from the back, even through and around serious pressure, for better or worse. Try to lure teams onto you, cut through them and attack quickly. And we've seen times when that's worked really well. We've seen times when it's not worked at all, and Chelsea have looked like a bad team. But I don't think the plan has ever really meaningfully changed. And there are certainly things within it that you can question. Like, for example, I think the positioning of Enzo Fernandez has been questionable in the last few weeks. That is one of the things that has shifted throughout the season. And I think a lot of the time he's been too far ahead of the ball to help out Moises Caicedo, who's been left with a mass of space in midfield to cover. And that's given Chelsea problems in terms of their defensive balance. So there may be issues with Pochettino's plan, and definitely issues with how well Chelsea execute it on a game-by-game basis. But that's not the same as saying that he doesn't have one. I think he does have one. It's quite clear that he has one.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Let's do one more before we move on. Simon, this one comes from James, but it might have come from you. It says, with us most likely needing to sell a homegrown player this summer, everyone's obviously talking about Gallagher, but what about Reece James? Can barely get 10 games a season out of him and might get more money for him than Connor as well. Is there still a market for Reece James? Surely he's going to have to come back before the end of the season and play consistently for anybody to be interested in taking him, if indeed that's even a thing, given the length of his contract and the fact he's a club captain.
Well, first and foremost, just talking generally rather than about Reece James in particular, I've been told by more than one person that essentially Chelsea, if a bid's good enough, Chelsea will entertain it for pretty much anyone. So we'll consider it, I think, is perhaps a better way of phrasing it. So what does that mean for Reece James? Well, yeah, if a club makes a £100 million offer, then I'm sure it will be considered. The question you now have to ask is, will a club make a £100 million offer? If I was that club, and Reece James has had interest inevitably from top, top clubs for a few years now, but if I was that club, I would want some evidence that if I'm going to spend that kind of money, he can play a full season, which is something he hasn't done now for a few years, unfortunately, for him personally and for Chelsea. Will something happen this summer? I don't know, you know, I'll be honest, but I don't think you can rule anything out as far as Reece James is concerned, because when he is fit, there are arguments. You'll always see the banter on X, usually between Chelsea and Liverpool fans, about Reece James versus Trent Alexander-Arnold. But there is a mass opinion of Reece James being the best right back in his position, but we just haven't seen it. And yeah, I feel like I'm sort of going around the house a little bit. But ifs, buts and maybes. I think the first thing for Reece James to do, though, is to is to get back out on the pitch. What will be interesting, actually, is to sort of see how he's handled over the next 2 months, because undoubtedly he will want to come back sooner rather than later for so many reasons. I think he's found it really, really difficult, as you would do being injured, but even more so being the captain. I think he genuinely cares. You know, he got into trouble when he was. It was the Aston Villa game, wasn't it? I think yes, earlier in the season. He wasn't even playing and he got into trouble because of things he said to the referee. So he genuinely cares. But also, there's that outside, I think you have to say, very, very outside hope of making an England squad for the European Championships too. So you've got Reece James wanting to come back as soon as possible. And there's no coincidence he's posting things on social media, looking in great shape and all that. Wish I could do the same. And then you've got Chelsea, who will obviously want to avoid a repeat of this never-ending circle of him coming back, getting injured, and sort of that setback again. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see if Reece James can convince Chelsea that he should be back in the side sooner rather than later, because I think Chelsea's first instinct is to take as long as possible.
Yeah, especially with Malo Gusto performing the
Yes.
way that he has been in recent weeks. He's such a massive player, potentially, Reece James, for whoever he plays for. But I'm just looking, and the most league games he's ever started in a season for Chelsea is 25. He did 44 of 46 for Wigan back in 18-19, but that's a long time ago now. All right, well, he's not going to be involved when Chelsea take on Newcastle on Monday, and that's what we're going to focus on next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, Chelsea welcoming Newcastle United to Stamford Bridge for the second time this season when the Magpies fly down from the northeast on Monday night. The Blues bested them after a penalty shootout in the League Cup quarterfinal. This game all about Premier League points for two teams mired in mid-table. Interesting this, Liam, because it's the start of a run of four home games in a row in all competitions. Chelsea got the same number of points at Stamford Bridge as they have on the road this season. So is it a good thing or a bad thing that they're going to be at the Bridge for the next few weeks? Pat Nevin, I saw making the point on the BBC that the home supporters have been more forgiving than the away fans thus far.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, Simon can give you a better idea than I can about what it was like at the Leeds game, because my impression watching on TV was for them to concede the goal they did and fall behind in the manner they did early on, I expected it to be almost immediate mutiny, and it didn't seem to be. What was it like, Simon?
Well, I think it was resignation, just yeah. Here we go again. But yeah, you're right. It was surprising. I wouldn't say it was supportive, but it wasn't toxic either.
Wasn't immediately furious.
No.
Yeah. So I think what you get, the larger any crowd is, the more you get a range of feelings and opinions. Whereas I think the away fans, they are the hardcore. Most of them know each other. they've all been going following Chelsea home and abroad for years and years and years.
A lot of them are in producer Lucy's immediate family. We shouldn't forget that.
So. They all talk to each other on trains and coaches to and from games. I think you tend to get much more of a collective feeling, for better or worse, depending on how the team's doing, how they feel about the coach, the owners, everything. And it tends to be easier for that size of a group with that kind of dynamic to speak with one voice. And we saw in the Brentford game how hostile, shall we say, that voice can be when they're of the mind to be. So yeah, it could be a little bit more forgiving, but I wouldn't lean on that if I were Pochettino. Chelsea need to be as convincing and consistent as possible. The second one might be more difficult than the first in these games. They need to give the fans a reason to believe that the next couple of months are not just going to be depressing. You know, there isn't really realistically much they can do about the table. Maybe they can sneak into a European place if they finish strongly. I don't think anyone at this point seriously believes they're going to win the FA Cup, although it would be a great story if they did. So I think the main thing is trying to give everyone involved the idea that the team is at least moving in the right direction, and it's not this one step forward, two steps back that it seems like it's been for most of the season. But if they, you know, if they have a bad day at Stamford Bridge, I said this after the Brentford game, it does feel like they're always a bad 20 minutes away from mutiny in the stands. And I think if it continues in this vein, you know, I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that we get chants directed at Pochettino and at the owners from the home support. And I think that will register far bigger with everyone involved than the few thousand away fans making their feelings known.
It's interesting because you think about the most encouraging performances or results this season, and they've pretty much all come away. Burnley, Spurs, Villa, Palace, Manchester City. I'm just looking through the home results. There's not really a standout result.
Well, the best ones have been draws, haven't they?
Yeah, the 4-4 against City is about it, isn't it? And 1-1 Liverpool opening day. But otherwise, big wins. You're looking, they were against the likes of Preston and Middlesbrough and Blackburn and squeezing past Wimbledon. Anyway, in terms of this game, Simon, what are we doing with the team? Do you think Pochettino sticks with a back three, or was that Brentford specific? Are you thinking maybe bringing Thiago Silva back might add a bit of organisation to the defence that was maybe lacking at Brentford last weekend?
I'd be surprised if he kept the back three. It felt like a response to, I don't know why, but a response to Brentford. And it didn't particularly work either. Playing four is a more aggressive formation. And despite its issues, is the formation that he's played for most seasons, as Liam referred to earlier. So it'd be weird to suddenly switch it now on a consistent basis because the players, I wouldn't say they're comfortable with it, but at least they know it. Whereas I think the wing back formation, it does limit you attacking wise, and noticeably he did change it when they fell 2-1 behind and sort of went on introduced more attacking players because Chelsea needed a goal. Thiago Silva, here we go again. I feel like me and Liam should now break off and have a conversation between us and then do a piece about it. But we did that a few months ago. I was on the he should stay in the team for the rest of the season because I was worried about what would happen when he's not in the team because there's so few leaders as it is. And then, of course, he got injured, which meant that Pochettino had no choice. And so we got to see what it was like without him. And I still stand by that argument. The lack of leadership is a problem. But I think you have to look ahead to next season now. You have to build, even if Pochettino isn't there. If you're Chelsea, you want to see, you have to move on. So I would prefer it if he isn't there. But I'm certainly not going to be upset if he is, because the guy's done wonders for Chelsea. But I just think Chelsea have to... One of the things they can do in the last few months of the season is try and sort of plan for next season, if that is a any kind of upside.
On Newcastle, only won three of their last 13 league games. They have won two of their last three on the road at Forest and Villa, but their only other away league win this season was that 8-0 demolition of Sheffield United, which looks about par now, to be fair, as the season's panned out. They've lost eight away league games. Only Brentford, Burnley and Sheffield United have been beaten on the road more often than that in the Premier League this season.
If you could go back in time, and I admit that perhaps I got this one wrong, Anthony Gordon or Mudryk, which is sorry. I remember going, Anthony Gordon, what on earth are they doing looking at him for?
Yeah, but Thomas Tuchel wanted Anthony Gordon as a left wing back.
I was going to say, Anthony Gordon in a Newcastle shirt versus a Chelsea shirt. I think there might be...
Well, that is true. But it is a subplot and will continue to be fixtures between these two clubs because Chelsea, Anthony Gordon, you have to give him his dues. He's looked a better player than I thought he was. And you have to say he's looked a better player than Mudryk. So anyway, to chip in there and spoil your flow.
Absolutely destroyed it. But never mind, because maybe if Chelsea had got Anthony Gordon, they wouldn't have got Cole Palmer. Who knows? But what I wanted to talk about was something similar in a kind of transfer vein, Liam. The curious case, I've called this, of Lewis Hall. He started one league game for Newcastle, and even then he got subbed off at halftime. How obligatory is this obligation to buy? Because reading between the lines, I sense that they'd rather back out of this deal if they had the chance.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one to follow at this point in the season. Everything we've been told from all parties involved is that the triggers on this obligation are so low that it's an obligation to buy for 28.5 million up front, I think rising to 35. I think you'd have to say he's not on track to trigger those add-ons at the very least right now. It's been a very weird dynamic on the Newcastle side of things. And I haven't been plugged in into it week to week, but I've been talking to Chris Woff, our Newcastle correspondent, about it on a semi-regular basis. And it just seems like Eddie Howe has never been that enthused by Lewis Hall. And I don't really know why.
Especially because he looks like he could be Eddie Howe's son. You think that might bond them?
Well, and also, he seems to, on the surface, fit the profile of the type of player that Eddie Howe wants in his team, which is a really good athlete who can work really hard, fit into a physically intense pressing system. Yeah, it's a strange one. I can only think that maybe Hall is still stuck in that positional purgatory that he was in for much of his very short Chelsea career. Is he a left back? Is he a midfielder? He sees himself as a midfielder. That's what he was in Chelsea's academy, a kind of box-to-box guy in a midfield three. But virtually all of his senior experience has come as a left back. And there's a real argument to make that his skill set, his physical tools, are more suited to playing as a fullback or wingback in the Premier League. But for whatever reason, Eddie Howe hasn't trusted him really in either position, and he's actually played, but I mean he's played Dan Burn, who's done amazingly well as a left back but is a centre back in that position for most of the season. He's even played Tino Livramento, another former Cobham graduate, in front of Hall at left back. So it is very, very strange. It seems like that was maybe a deal that was driven by Dan Ashworth at Newcastle, who is now on his way out. And for whatever reason, Eddie Howe is not in the Lewis Hall fan club. And I can't imagine it's a personality thing, because Lewis Hall's a quiet guy, very dedicated. Everything we've heard about him as a young footballer is that he cares about the right things. He wants to be really good. So I think it's a football issue, but I don't think Newcastle can get out of it. We can't say 100% because none of us have seen the contractual agreement. But based on everything we've been told, I don't think Newcastle can get out of it. I don't think Chelsea's owners will want them to be able to get out of it either, because I think they've probably already banked that money in the accounts for this year. But it is a very, very strange situation.
I just wonder whether Newcastle's sort of disappointing season has also played a part just a little bit, that Eddie Howe has struggled. And when you're under pressure for results, you tend to go with your tried and tested experienced guys, and perhaps almost like a Chelsea scenario, you ignore the youngsters, because Livramento is bizarrely not a regular starter in recent weeks. He sort of seems to be on the bench quite a lot. And I just noticed on Newcastle United social media, you know, just sort of seeing how fans are reacting, that they seem to be questioning, well, why is Dan Byrne playing? He seems to be struggling. I don't watch Newcastle weekly, but just going by what they're saying, they question Livramento, they question where Lewis Hall is. So I think this reflects badly on Eddie Howe, actually, because I think we all saw, like, Lewis Hall was from a horrific season last season. He was actually one of Chelsea's better players consistently in so many games, and so many of those games were big ones. Like, he played in, I think, all the sort of pretty much all the tough away fixtures, including Newcastle, and looked like he was very sort of he could handle the big stage. So I think everyone from a Chelsea perspective is baffled by Lewis Hall's treatment, as in everyone that's watched Lewis Hall, from me and Liam to the fan base, etc. You can remember the outcry when he was sold, or, you know, effectively sold, the loan with the obligation. So it's very, 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 very odd. And it's a great shame for Lewis Hall, because he really should have had the chance to kick on this season. It feels like a wasted year, whatever happens.
Mm. Eddie Howe, not a backer of young English talent. Favourite to replace Gareth Southgate as England manager. All right, well, that game goes down on Monday night. It means our next show will be on Tuesday.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Right, elsewhere in Chelsea news, a shocking story that broke earlier this week. Chelsea striker Sam Kerr will appear in court next year, charged with the alleged racially aggravated harassment of a police officer. A Met police spokesman said this relates to an incident involving a police officer who was responding to a complaint involving a taxi fare on January 30th, 2023 in Twickenham. Kerr pleaded not guilty at a trial at Kingston Crown Court on Monday. She's due to appear at Wimbledon Magistrates Court in February of next year. Emma Hayes was speaking about this ahead of the Conti Cup semi-final on Thursday. She said, "Sam has our full support. She knows that. Of course, I can't comment. I can say that I know she's pleaded not guilty. I don't want to do anything to jeopardise anything for Sam.
by speaking about it. Now, Liam, you've joined up with our friend Jesse Barker Humphreys to report on this for The Athletic. It's a strange old story, isn't it, for many reasons, not least that it's taken 14 months after the alleged offence was committed to come to light, and the trial's not until next year. Have you been able to piece together much that you can tell us about legally on this?
Well, I think there's not a lot we can say because there hasn't been a great deal of information released beyond the police statement. Chelsea are not commenting on an ongoing legal process. Sam Kerr has not said anything publicly. I believe she spoke only to confirm her identity and enter a plea of not guilty at the pre-trial hearing. The one thing that strikes me about this is what you referred to, Matt, is the unsatisfactory nature of the process. The fact that it's taken so long for the CPS to bring these charges, and now there's such a long wait for all parties to actually get this heard and some sort of resolution. February 2025, it's a crazy amount of time to have to wait, and I think it complicates things for everyone involved. We'd reported in January, our colleague Charlotte Harper reported in January, that Sam Kerr had agreed in principle to extend her contract at Chelsea. This was after she'd suffered her ACL injury. And it was also a few days after she was formally charged by the Met. So we don't know, but you would assume at that point that Chelsea were aware of what was coming. But now there's no suggestion that anything has actually been signed. So what does Sam Kerr do? What do Chelsea do? Is there any sense of reneging on an agreement to extend? It's a really, really complicated situation. And now the thing for Sam Kerr, I think, is the rest of this year was always going to be dominated by her rehabilitation. She's not expected to be over this ACL injury until early 2025 and in position to return to the pitch, whether it's for Chelsea or for someone else. And now it looks like the early months of 2025 are going to be overshadowed by this looming trial. So it's a very difficult situation, I think, for all parties to handle now. And the fact that the process has been so prolonged and is still nowhere near close to being over, I think it doesn't really help anyone.
That's right. Well, on the pitch, Kerr's teammates in action tonight as we record. They go to Manchester City in the semi-final of the Conti Cup. They then head to Merseyside on Sunday to face Everton in the FA Cup quarter-final. So a big few days on the pitch for Emma Hayes' team as she looks to leave on a high. In terms of the men's academy sides, the under-21s in action on Friday night. They're away at Newcastle in PL2, whilst the under-18s have a league game away to Crystal Palace on Saturday morning. You can watch that one live on the app with me, if you like. Right, nearly done for today, but you know it's quiz time next. Simon's not happy about the kickoff of this particular fixture. He's gone full Jurgen Klopp, going on the expression on his face.
Yeah, I hate half 12 kickoffs.
Well, Lucy's just wrote in the doc next to the questions, shamefully easy, next to yours, Simon. So I mean, that's throwing shade at me and and Liam.
No, I'm sorry.
But... Oh, both. Oh, okay. Brilliant. Thanks for that. Cheers.
Well, yeah, I appreciate the clarification because... I'm not a morning person, so there's nothing easy. I just find just logging in quite difficult, let alone answering any questions. So,
all right,
Simon's
I really hope
question
it's
one: who's better, Anthony Gordon or Mikhailo Mudryk? Yeah.
It's not quite that easy. Lucy's keeping score; she's working on the tiebreaker as we speak. Simon, you're going to kick us off. Which two Newcastle players failed to score in the League Cup quarterfinal shootout against Chelsea?
I was there, so I've got absolutely no excuse to get this wrong. It was Kieran Trippier, who shot wide, and Matt Ritchie had his penalty saved.
Very good. Yes, 1-0. Maybe these are too easy. Maybe next week we'll just do a massive quiz just for Lucy. and I'll make it as difficult as possible. We'll see. I think that'll
I'd
get
still
some,
lose.
Some good support. Liam, here you go. Who scored Newcastle's goal in regulation time in that League Cup quarterfinal? It's 1-1 after 90-plus minutes. Newcastle led for a long time in the game before Simon's favourite signing of the Bowley Clear Lake era plundered a stoppage time equaliser.
Oh, Anthony Gordon.
I was trying to remember that precise thing earlier. I should just do like formal revision for these quizzes.
I hate this pre-quiz prep that Bosch has brought into proceedings.
And that I'm shunning to my own detriment. I seem to remember it being a really bad goal, but that doesn't particularly narrow it down based on what we've seen this season.
Yeah, it is bog standard. Have there been any worldies?
I'm going to say distract Liam. Callum Wilson.
Callum Wilson is correct. 1-1. Okay.
Yeah, and it was a bad goal. You're right. Remember, he sort of bundled his way through. It was between Silver and Badia Shield.
Badia Shield, it's just himself in glory. Right, I think, Simon, this is the most difficult question of the quiz. Who made their most recent Chelsea appearance as a half-time substitute when the teams met on the last day of the season at Stamford Bridge last year?
I was in France, so Liam was there, so there's definitely advantage to me.
Yeah, but I was already on the beach last day of the season.
I might guess, because I know how your mind works. I'm going to take a punt on Lewis Hall.
Liam, you can steal it.
Oh.
Most recent Chelsea appearance. So I've got to find that narrow part of the Venn diagram of players who haven't played this season but players who were still at the club last season.
Vindication of the quality of the questions on the quiz here.
God, this is where the kind of like tumble dryer overhaul of the squad just blurs my brain.
Half the squad was basically playing their last game for the club as well.
Come on, gonna have to push you, Liam.
I've got another idea who it might have been, but it's too late. Press the start soon, Liam.
I don't know.
The answer was Wesley Fofana.
Yeah.
You even gave yourself a clue, Simon, saying you're in France. Okay, where are we? Second question.
Hey, it wasn't like I was scouting his family or anything like that.
Liam, question number two. Who got sent off in the reverse meeting at St James's Park in November?
Reece James
is correct. Lucy, can we get a score update, please?
It's 2-1.
It's 2-1 to Liam. Here's your second question, Simon. Which future Newcastle defender scored for Chelsea in a 1-1 draw against the Magpies at Stamford Bridge in August
1998? Which future defender? He played for both clubs.
I think I know this, but I'd be stunned if it gets to me.
I just want to go, so I'm going to go, give it Liam. I can't be bothered.
You're really not a morning person.
Haven't you learned this by now? I mean,
that feels like an excuse to me. I think you just don't know the answer. Go on then, Liam. Who was it?
Is it Celestine Babiara?
Of course it was Celestine.
It was Baba.
Yeah, you knew that, Simon. That makes it 3-1 to Liam, right? But we'll go through the final question just for admin purposes, I suppose. Liam, which future Newcastle winger scored in the Blues' 5-0 demolition of the Magpies at the Bridge in November
2003? Zenden, not Kronkjaer. Winger. I feel like we might have a different definition of winger in 2003.
Wide man.
Person who troubled the touchline.
It's Damien Duff.
Of course. Yeah,
it was Damien.
Completely Duff. Forgot Damien Duff's Newcastle right, chapter.
Late consolation goal. I've got to go.
It's a shame, Simon, because you'd have liked the tiebreaker, which Lucy that wrote, was. Which was add together Mykhailo Mudryk and Anthony Gordon's shooting accuracy so far this season.
That's just Mudryk.
Mudrick's is 25%, Gordon's is 42%, so 67%.
To be fair, whatever else you say about Mudryk, his finishing has been pretty good.
Yes, wow. That's true.
25% of the time he's on target, every time. All right, so a much-needed win for Liam in the quiz. Well done, Liam. Right, we're almost done. We just got to ask you for a favour, listener. We want to hear from you. We're asking you to fill out a quick survey about you and your podcast habits by going to theathletic.com/survey24. Three lucky entries will win £100 worth of Amazon vouchers too. So whether you're a long-time listener or a new one, we want your feedback. Go to theathletic.com/survey24. That's theathletic.com/survey24. We'll put the link in the show notes. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SO Cobham Pod. Leave us some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. That'd be great too. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up. If you aren't a subscriber, if people do that, Simon, they can read your much anticipated piece on Strasbourg and the similarities between they and Chelsea.
Yeah, the dissertation has finally been handed in. A few percentage points taken off by my tutor, Dom Fifield. It's scarily similar. They even sort of had an average age of a team, 22.8 against Paris Saint-Germain, which is very similar to, I think Chelsea had hit that against an opponent very recently too. It's an in-depth how the relationship's going. Obviously, there are issues. It talks about sort of how they how often they meet, how often they talk, the recruitment. Do Chelsea tell Strasbourg what to do? Do how much say does Vieira have? How are they treating Santos and Angelo, Gabriel, etc., etc.? And of course, how happy the fans are, because they're angrier than Chelsea supporters, and that says something. So yeah, it's a very in-depth piece about the sister club, and they very much sort of, Strasbourg will argue that they're very much not a subservient member of this first multi-club partnership. But yeah, it's not going smoothly. They're only 3 points above the relegation zone, which sort of says it all.
Yeah, could always be worse. Liam, what are you working on, please?
Ahead of the Newcastle game, I'll be working on a piece looking at the goals that Chelsea have conceded in the second half. They conceded 28 of their 44 goals in the Premier League this season in the second half. And I think it's been a talking point among fans, the idea that this Chelsea team often seems to go to sleep after half time. And good performances are kind of lost after the interval too often. So I'm going to try and look back at all of Chelsea's finest defensive moments in the second half this season and try to figure out what on earth has been going on.
All right. And how different they would have been had Anthony Gordon been there defending from the front. athletic.com/ChelseaPod.
Really,
the place to go
that.
To sign up to read them. Yeah, that's the new you trying to bomb out and go like Kante for about 5 years or whatever that was. We'll be back on Tuesday with our next show. Join us for that if you can. Bye for now.
The Athletic.